New Testament, and we covered our first letter, and we're now in our second letter, which was the letter to the Galatians. We had discussed briefly how the author was Paul, and who that letter was written to, which was to the churches in southern Galatia, and then a little bit about the background of the letter. Why was it written? We discussed what we thought were some of the key verses, and we had covered all of Galatians chapter 1. So we know the background of the letter. We talked a little bit about the key verse being, "Stand fast, therefore, in the liberty by which Christ has made us free, and not entangled again of the yoke of bondage." We had fully covered chapter 1 at the end of our class, and I don't know, I took this semi-serious because I had to study for tonight and this class, so I didn't get into it. But I know Mike had asked the question last week, how many apostles were there really? Did anybody get a chance to dive in on that study on their own? The comment was made, is it really 12 or how many more are there really? And I don't want to get derailed on it, but I just wanted to see if anybody had an answer or had time to look it over. If you didn't, we'll maybe pick it up another week.
Well, it seems like there were 12, and Judas, there were 12.
Sure.
Judas killed himself, he was replaced.
Yeah.
That's 13.
Yeah.
Paul's called an apostle, that's 14. But we know he had the work of an apostle.
Yeah.
There's other people who are called apostles.
Sure.
Barnabas is called an apostle, but did he have the same ability to pass on gifts that the other did?
Yeah.
So 14.
Yeah, okay, so you're sticking with 14. Yeah.
I would go with that too.
Yeah.
Apostle means to be sent. And there are many who were sent in the sense.
Yeah.
Sent.
Okay. Yeah, there are many. I know Mike had a neighbor that said that he thought there were 26, give or take. And I've seen where people think there are 25, 26. But like you say, one sent, I think you get down to 14. Mike, were you going to say something? Look like I cut you off.
We know that Christ himself chose 12, and then two more were chosen specifically by God and the Holy Spirit.
One is a replacement.
That we know of,
yeah.
But I'm not saying that, you know, Barnabas, James, and maybe others weren't also chosen in some manner, but it doesn't look like it's recorded anymore.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. All right. Well, we just, it was a good question and one for us to kind of read about and do a little studying. And not to be too derailed. Okay, so that brings us to chapter 2. In kicking off chapter 2, and this is probably the one time, and I'm not, well, I shouldn't clarify as that, but up to this point, I haven't deviated a ton from just the high-level overview of the book. Today, we're probably going to do that a little bit, and I think it's because it's important to this letter that we fully understand circumcision, and that we fully talk about that, and so in doing so, we're gonna leave the book and maybe look at a little bit of history on that. So, in studying this chapter, though, the objectives are: one, to understand why Paul would refuse to circumcise Titus, but then he had Timothy circumcised at a later time, and that was recorded in Acts chapter 16, verses 1 through 3. So that's one thing we're gonna look at. To understand why Paul would refuse, and to appreciate why it was necessary for Paul to rebuke Peter to his face. So those are two things in this chapter that are pretty important that we want to look at. First of all, if you remember, in chapter 1, he took a lot of time to defend his apostleship. We saw that, and we spent a little time looking at that, and to defend the gospel. And so if you need to, on your own, go back and look at that, Galatians chapter 1 and 1, you can see that where he defends his apostleship, which was in question by some, and also the gospel, which he spends, the better part of the middle of chapter 2 doing, verses 11, 12, right in there. So, chapter 2 starts off, and it tells us, and I'll just read the first five verses here, Galatians chapter 2, verse 1 through 5. "Then after 14 years, I went up again to Jerusalem with Barnabas, and also took Titus with me. And I went up by the revelation, and communicated to them that the gospel which I preach among the Gentiles, but privately to those who were of reputation, lest by any means I might run or had run in vain. Yet not even Titus, who was with me, being Greek, was compelled to be circumcised. But this occurred because of the false brethren secretly brought in, who came in by stealth, by spy, out our liberty, which we have in Christ Jesus, that they might bring us to bondage, to whom we did not yield submission even for an hour, that the truth of the gospel might continue with you. So here he makes the point that, of course, we see that 14 years after, 14 years later, him, Barnabas, and Titus were together, and we see here he had an opportunity to communicate the gospel which he preached. Okay, we can go to, and someone go to this. Will someone turn to Romans chapter 10 and verses 8 through 13? Romans 10, 8 through 13. What we're going to look at here is this gospel that we're talking about. Who is the gospel for? So let's get the answer to this. Romans 10, 8 through 13.
But what does it say? The word is near you, in your mouth, in your heart. That is the word of faith which we preach. That if you confess with your mouth the Lord Jesus and believe with your heart that God has raised him from the dead, you will be saved. For with the heart one believes unto righteousness, and with the mouth confession is made unto salvation. For the Scripture says, whoever believes on him will not be put to shame. For there is no distinction between Jew or Greek, for the same Lord over all is rich to all who calls upon him. For whoever calls on the name of the Lord shall be saved.
Okay. So, whoever calls on the name of the Lord can be saved. And we know we can exploit that even further. But I wanted to kind of read in general who the gospel was for to all mankind. And the point being made here in this book, in this letter, we're going to get in that as well. He did refuse to allow Titus to be circumcised. And we know that was a big deal. And what was Titus? What was his origin? What was he? He was Greek, okay? And was it necessary for him to be circumcised? And if not, if you say no, then why not? Okay, Eric says it was not. Other thoughts?
Well, he wasn't living under the Jewish law, and neither was anyone else at this time.
Yeah.
At least they shouldn't.
Yeah, okay.
They didn't need to be.
Yeah, maybe that's a better way of saying it. They just didn't need to be. And so these false brethren, if you will, who sought to force Titus to keep this law, if you will, Paul adamantly refused and stood firm on this in the truth of the gospel, if you will. But the issue of circumcision, though, was a big deal, and it was a major concern at this time. And we answer the question, but the Gentiles at this time, or non-Jews, let's just say it that way, that became Christians, did they need to be circumcised to keep the law? The answer being no. But this question came up. So I thought we would take a little time today, and this may take a little time, but I think it's a good study. So it's a side study for what's going on in this book. But in the old law, I want to look at this practice of circumcision so that we see the history of it, and then we kind of unfold it and bring it forward to here. So in the old law, what the sign of the covenant, who did it begin with?
Abraham.
Okay. Began Abraham, but Isaac. So let's go to, somebody go to Genesis chapter 17. We're going to read this a little bit. We'll read a few verses, and then we'll talk about some. But it did begin with Abraham, so let's go to Genesis 17, 9 through 14.
Well, Isaac was the first person to ever be circumcised, not Abraham.
Okay, but the covenant...
the covenant was made with Abraham.
Right.
But the beginning...
Through Isaac, okay. So, yeah, so the covenant began, and if I didn't say that when I said it, that's what I meant, is the covenant began with Abraham. So, Genesis 17, that's what we're going to read about. Genesis 17, 9 through 14. Will somebody read that?
God said to Abraham, as for you, you shall keep my covenant, you and your descendants after you throughout their generation. This is my covenant with you. This is my covenant which you shall keep between me and you and your descendants after you. Every male child among you shall be circumcised, and you shall be circumcised to replace your foreskin and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and you. He who is 8 days old among you shall be circumcised, every male child in your generation. He who is born in your house or bought with money, any foreigner who is not your descendant. He who is born in your house and he who is bought with your money must be circumcised, and my covenant shall be in your flesh for an everlasting covenant. And the uncircumcised male child who is not circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin, that person shall be cut off from his people. He has broken my covenant.
Okay. I was going to say, then go to verse 23, because it's not Isaac, but I go to 23 through 27. You'll read that.
Well,
it's Ishmael, right?
So Abraham took Ishmael's son, all yeah. who were born in his house, and all who were bought with his money, every male among the men of Abraham's house, and circumcised the flesh of the foreskins that very same day, as God had said to him. Abraham was 99 years old when he was circumcised in the flesh of the foreskin, and Ishmael, his son, was 13 years old when he was circumcised in the flesh of his foreskin. That very same day, Abraham was circumcised, and his son Ishmael, and all the men of his house, born in the house or bought with money from a foreigner, were circumcised with him.
Okay, good. Yeah, I had to go back and double check it myself. I know I read about the covenant, but I wanted to see the first, so Ishmael. All right, and then there's a reference to this in Romans chapter 4, verse 11. I'll read. And he received the sign of circumcision, a seal of the righteousness of the faith, which he had while still uncircumcised, that he might be the father of all those who believe, though they are uncircumcised, that righteousness might be imputed to them also. And then I had it in my notes, and so that's why you made me mentally think about it. But then it continued on with Isaac, Jacob, and his sons. And of course, we can read that in Genesis chapter 21 and verse 4. We won't, but and that continuation of Jacob and his sons was chapter 34, verses 14 through 17. So on through the generations, we see that. Moses circumcised his sons. We can read about that. And he gave an ordinance to all of Israel to do the same in Exodus chapter 4 and verse 26. So we can read that, and then we can come to the New Testament and see a reference to that in John chapter 7. It was required to observe the Passover. So somebody that's still in Genesis area, go to Exodus chapter 12, verse 48. Will somebody read that? Exodus 12, verse 48.
You may be getting to this a little bit later too, Clayton, but one of the important things I see from that passage in Romans in one other place is the fact that the faith that was accounted to Abraham was before he was circumcised and not after. So it wasn't circumcision that made him righteous.
We're going to get into that act. Yep, that's good.
And when a stranger dwells with you and wants to keep the Passover of the Lord, let all his males be circumcised, and then let him come near and keep it. And he shall be as a native of the land, for no circumcision. No uncircumcised person shall eat.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. So it's about the Passover. Then we can go to Leviticus chapter 12, verses 1 through 3, and we get about the what day. It says, then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel, saying, if a woman has conceived and born a male child, then she shall be unclean 7 days, as in the days of her customary impurity, she shall be unclean. And on the eighth day, the flesh of the foreskin shall be circumcised. So here we have the actual mention of the eighth day is the day that should occur. What about the Jews that were born in the wilderness that had not been circumcised? We can read about that too. Will somebody go to Joshua chapter 5? Let's read about that. And again, I'm just giving you a little history here in the Old Testament. I don't know that we need it, but I think it's good. It's good for why there was such a big deal going on at this time. Joshua chapter 5, verses 1 through 8. What happened just as they crossed the River Jordan?
So it was when all the kings of the Amorites who were on the west side of the Jordan and all the kings of the Canaanites who were by the sea heard that the Lord had dried up the waters of the Jordan from before the children of Israel until we had crossed over, that their hearts melted, and there was no spirit in them any longer because of the children of Israel. At that time, the Lord said to Joshua, make flint knives for yourselves and circumcise the sons of Israel again the second time. So Joshua made flint knives for himself and circumcised the sons of Israel at the hill of the foreskins. And this is the reason why Joshua circumcised them. All the people who came out of Egypt who were males, all the men of war, had died in the wilderness on the way after they had come out of Egypt. For all the people who came out had been circumcised in the circumcised, but all of the people born in the wilderness on the way as they came out of Egypt had not been circumcised. For the children of Israel walked 40 years in the wilderness till all the people who were men of war had come out of Egypt were consumed because they did not obey the voice of the Lord to whom the Lord had sworn that he would not show them the land which the Lord had sworn to their fathers that he would give us. A land flowing with milk and honey. Then Joshua circumcised their sons, whom he raised up in their place, for they were uncircumcised because they had not been circumcised on the way.
Okay, perfect. That's good. Thank you. So, what does it mean? Let's go back. I think it was maybe two. Joshua making flint knives for himself. Where he says, make flint knives for yourself and circumcise the sons of Israel again the second time. So what does that mean? Do they literally have to go be circumcised again? No.
I'm thinking that he's referring to the fact that the parents were circumcised.
Right.
And so we're going to do it again with you people.
Correct. I agree.
Well, it couldn't have been a second circumcision for them because it states later that they weren't.
Right, yeah. So it's talking about those who were not. So, okay, so that's kind of, if we go back to Old Testament, it gives you a little how it was instituted, why, what that covenant was, and how that was passed down. Any other comments about in the Old Law, Old Testament, before we get into...
I've got one more.
Sure.
What's the business about the foreigners or their slaves that they purchased that says that they need to be circumcised as well? When that happened, were they a part of the covenant? And
if they were took into his house.
I thought
they
were circumcised and they
kept
the Passover.
Okay.
They couldn't take the Passover unless they were.
Right. Yeah.
But what were the benefits, or were there no benefits to them? They just needed to perform this physical thing to be able to be in the camp or with the children of Israel. Why would God want these foreigners to have that done? Well, if they're going to be proselyted in, then they've got to be entitled to the benefits as well. But I don't know if they were or not.
I didn't think they were had to be circumcised, though. They only had to be if they wanted to partake of the Passover. But if they didn't, they didn't have to do
that. If you own somebody, but you didn't want to make them a Jew, they could take an awl and stick it through their ear on the doorpost, right? And that was one sign that showed that you owned that person, but not necessarily that they were a member of the family or...
Not part of that.
Not part of the Jewish religion.
I guess I bring it up. I want to talk a little bit about this today, but I think it's important for us as being non-Jews, how do we become a part of the blessing or the family of Abraham, and what benefits are we entitled to as well, you know, if we're purchased, if we're bought with the price.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. So we'll touch the tip of the iceberg here, and then you're probably going to bring it home. So that's good. It's a good question, Eric. I don't know that I have a perfect answer. I know this. If they were going to partake of the Passover, they had to be, but I don't know anymore.
That's exactly why today people who are not members of God's church have no right to partake of his body and blood.
Yeah. No benefit of them. Good. Yeah. Yeah. Good. Very similar point. Okay. So that brings us to the New Testament then, on the topic of circumcision. And when we look at... I just gathered some points here just for us to see, but John the Baptist was circumcised as an infant. We can see that in Luke chapter 1, and I'm just going to look at a few of these events. Verse 57 through 59 says, "Now Elizabeth's full time came for her to be delivered, and she brought forth a son. When her neighbors and relatives heard how the Lord had shown great mercy to her, they rejoiced with her. Now, so it was on the eighth day that they came to circumcise the child, and they would have called him by the name of his father, Zacharias. Okay, so we see that. Was Jesus circumcised? Yep. So in Luke chapter 2, we just turn the page. Luke chapter 2, verse 21, it says, "And when 8 days was complete for the circumcision of the child, his name was called Jesus, the name given by the angel before he was conceived in the womb." So we have that account. we see where, and let's go to Acts. If you want to go with me to Acts chapter 11, we see where this became an issue, and we can read a couple places. But it became an issue when the gospel was first preached to the Gentiles. Acts chapter 11, verse 1 through 3. "Now the apostles and brethren who were in Judea heard that the Gentiles had also received the word of God. And when Peter came up to Jerusalem, those of the circumcision contended with him, saying, 'You went in to uncircumcised men and ate with them?'" And so, you know, here he's kind of being confronted about, you know, why would you even do that? So they had an issue with you even being around those and eating with those who are uncircumcised. The focus of the controversy at Antioch and Jerusalem, similar things. So if we go over to Acts chapter 15, we see in verses 1 through 2, it says, "And certain men came down from Judea and taught the brethren, 'Unless you are circumcised according to the custom of Moses, you cannot be saved.' Therefore, when Paul and Barnabas had no small dissension and dispute with them, they determined that Paul and Barnabas and certain others of them should go up to Jerusalem to the apostles and elders about this question." And we skip on down to verses 4 through 6. "And when they had come to Jerusalem, they were received by the church and the apostles and the elders, and they reported all things that God had done with them. But some of the sect of the Pharisees who believed rose up, saying, 'It is necessary to circumcise them and to command them to keep the law of Moses.' So the apostles and elders came together to consider this matter." So a little bit of history here. This is where we see it's a problem. I mean, it was being discussed. There was concerns, and there was a little bit of turmoil. So Paul had, and we know this, if we just turn the page, Acts chapter 16, we know Paul had Timothy circumcised. Acts chapter 16, verses 1 through 3. "Then he came to Derbe and Lystra, and behold, a certain disciple was there named Timothy, the son of a certain Jewish woman who believed, but his father was Greek. He was well spoken by the brethren who were at Lystra and Iconium. Paul wanted to have him go on with him, and he took him and circumcised him because of the Jews who were in the region, for they all knew that his father was a Greek." So I want to pause here for a second. Why would Paul have done this? And I think it answers it right there, but why? Was it necessary?
No, but it eliminated one contention that people were going to have.
Yeah. So I think you said it. Was it necessary? So if we answer that question, did it have to be done? Absolutely not. But sometimes we do things that I think removes, and I use the word stigma. I don't know if that's the right word, but a hang up. For sure, there would be some that would have a hang up with this. And so if they would get stuck and they couldn't get past it and they had issues, then it was going to create a problem. So it was just easier. No harm, no foul. Let's get that done so we don't have a problem. Yeah, Ben.
So, you know, just imagine what would have happened if he wasn't circumcised. Well, apparently everyone knew this, and this is what would happen. He would spend his entire time justifying or arguing about circumcision and wouldn't have,
and that's not the point,
opportunity to talk about the gospel.
Yeah, I agree. So you brought up something, though, that I thought about as I got into this study. How would they have known or not known? You ever thought about that?
Well, it was...
Was it just talked about, and so it was one of those things that as the baby was 8 days old, it was something that... and it was just known, I guess?
That's the only thing that I can think is it was such a big deal.
Yeah.
That it was, you know, like what... you know, maybe
like our birth announcements, and so, yeah.
It was a big ceremony we would have, and if you didn't do it, well, everybody knew, and that sort of just followed you for life.
Yeah, but if you traveled, people wouldn't know. I tend to think that maybe, I don't know for a fact, but it leads me to believe that this may have been a standard question that the Jews asked a stranger coming into their assembly.
I think it's possibly true.
It may have just been something they do as a normal course of business, and just to make sure they were screening.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if that's what actually happened.
Yeah.
Because somehow they knew.
Yeah.
Either that or you had to announce it or something.
Right, yeah. So whether it was parental announcement, you announced it, or you got questioned about it just to your face, it was known. And the point being, back to Ben's point, I think it was just one of those things. They wanted to remove barrier. He wasn't going to make that the topic, and he knew it was going to cause problem and didn't want to have that.
Just a quick comment to include there. For a long time, in a sense, the Jewish, whether they were Jewish by nation, by nationality,
right,
or by spiritual sense, they were very much entwined.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, they were doing this because they were still Jews. I mean, if they wanted to continue doing it, I mean, there are certain things we might do because we're Americans that may have nothing to do with our Christian faith. Here, it kind of changed the fact that many of the Jews may still continue to do it because they were Jews.
Right.
But it had nothing to do with their Christian faith.
Okay, good point. Eric?
Again, this kind of comes to me of a comparison with today is, how do you know today if somebody has faith or not? You know, the indwelling of the Spirit has Christ in them. Well, we know it because we see their works,
the fruits,
we see their actions, we see their fruits. So you know if somebody has faith, not because of something you see externally, but because of something that is manifest in them. Likewise, with circumcision, how do you really know if this guy was circumcised? I mean, are you going to the bathroom with him and like peeking over the stall? You don't know. But you should know if he's a
right.
Jew, a faithful one, because of the way he lives. Same concept.
Yeah.
Not knowing
same as today.
What's inside, but knowing it because of the fruit.
Yep. Good point. Okay, and then, great point, Eric. It was rumored that Paul was teaching the Jews not to be circumcised. We're just continuing in Acts. Acts chapter 21, verses 18 through 21. On the following day, Paul went with us up to James and all the elders who were present. When he had greeted them, he told the detail those things which God had done among the Gentiles through his ministry. And when he had heard it, they glorified the Lord, and they said to him, "You see, brother, how many myriads of Jews there are who have believed, and they are all zealous by the law." And let me go on to 21. "But they have been informed about you that you teach all the Jews who are among the Gentiles to forsake Moses, saying that they ought not to circumcise their children nor walk according to the customs." And so here we have him being teaching this. And then we can go in, and I don't want to read all this, but we can continue to read in Paul's epistles to the Romans. We can go into Romans and see what he wrote there. We can see what he told the brethren in 1 Corinthians. And then again in Galatians, it's chock full. So we'll see this later. It's in chapter 5. It's in chapter 6 as well. He mentioned it in Ephesians chapter 2. And he also wrote it to the brethren and sisters at Colossians. Yes.
I think, you know, this is right at that time when the circumcision idea and the Judaism teaching is really a big issue. And I think this is during the time when they had the council as well.
Right.
And I think in Galatians, it's very possible that Paul was there, and when he said 14 years after, I think after he was converted, he went up the second time.
Right.
To Jerusalem.
That was his first
and
time, yeah.
I think that probably he went to the... He was there at that meeting, but there's no mention of him whatsoever, and he doesn't really mention it in the second chapter.
But we believe him to, yeah.
Because he was trying to be independent, because he's the apostle to the Gentiles.
Right.
So he's trying to let them know that he has authority independent of the ones at Jerusalem. Not that he's separated from them, but he has been given authority just like them to teach and preach the truth. And so I think that really the problem that they had in Galatia was they did have Judaizing teachers there, but I don't know that the circumcision question or the same questions that they discussed at the council really apply
here.
So he didn't mention that because he didn't want to deter from his trying to straighten them out.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I don't think you want to be sidetracked. Yeah, Kevin.
The point that to me is valuable anyway is, you know, by the time you get to Acts 15, it's probably at least in the late 40s, maybe the early 50s. Our first missionary journey was apparently in the late 40s or was only 15 years or so after the church had been established.
Yeah.
Naturally, in Acts chapter 10, the first Greek escaped my name, my memory all of a sudden. But anyway, that may not have been that long ago. But anyway, it really wasn't until 15 years later or so that this became an issue.
Right.
Until then, it had been all Jews that had been...
Sure. Yeah, it wasn't a problem. But it became one, so that's a good point. And I have a lot of notes on this, but I thought it was good to kind of look at it. But the physical circumcision not being required, and kind of how do we know it wasn't required? So I had to answer that question in my mind. Well, how do we know it wasn't required? Well, we can go into Acts chapter 10. You just talked about it, but the conversion of Cornelius' family. We can go read about that, and I'm thinking that's where you were headed. So, but in Acts chapter 10, you can go read about that. So we know that that wasn't necessary. It lays out there. Go read it for yourself, verses 44 and 48. You go into in Acts chapter 11, talks about it again. This was confirmed at the conference that Dwayne just talked about, that he's talking about in Acts chapter 15. We won't take time to read. I think we read part of it last week, but in verses 7 through 21, it's all detailed there. there are letters that are sent by the apostles and elders in that same Acts chapter 15 that we can go read. It wasn't necessary. It's pointed out. And then Paul, over and over and over in his letters, he expounds on that. And I've mentioned some of these already, but Romans, 1 Corinthians, and Galatians all mention it's just not necessary. So if that's not necessary, what form of circumcision is, and what is available today? And this is what Eric was talking about. So what was it?
Of the heart.
Okay, of the heart, spiritually. And that circumcision was not made with hands. So where would we go read about that? Someone may have Colossians handy. What'd you say? Yep, thank you. So, and I had Galatians 2, 11 and 12. In him you were also circumcised with a circumcision made without hands, by putting off the old body of the sins of the flesh by the circumcision of Christ, buried with him in baptism, in which you were also raised with him through faith in the working of God who raised him from the dead. Probably going to come into play with Eric's topic today, it sounds like. And so that occurs, and then if you go right on down to 13, it says, "And you, being dead in your trespasses and the uncircumcision of your flesh, he has made alive together with him, having forgiven you of all trespasses." Those three verses are really important to us here. So we took all that time, basically, to make sure we understood the history of where this circumcision became such a big deal, to watch that go through and be basically talked about and eliminated as Paul was coming through and trying to clarify with them.
I think it might be important to point out that to the Jew, it was a life and death circumstance to be circumcised. And to the Christian, it's a life and death issue also to be baptized.
Good point. You and Eric was about 25 minutes early, and you're just 30 seconds early. The ritual alone, which we're going to talk about, was not adequate, right? Just going through that circumcision was not adequate. It was true that it was required of Israel, and God desired circumcision of the heart as well as the flesh. We can go back in Deuteronomy and read that. Paul explained that the true Jew was one circumcised of the heart. We can read that, and let's go. Maybe we. I don't think we have. Let's go to Romans chapter 2. Did we read that yet? I don't. 2 and 28. I don't know if I. I don't think we have. So read 28 through the end there.
"For he is not a Jew who is one outwardly, nor is circumcision that which is outward in the flesh. But he is a Jew who is one inwardly, and circumcision is that of the heart.
Okay, and my last point on this, as far as it not being adequate alone, was the same is exactly true of us for today, for baptism. Exact same. It must be accompanied by faith and repentance. We can read that in Mark 16:16, and there's a lot of verses, so I just grabbed a few. But just going through the motion was not enough, and it wasn't enough then, and God didn't want them just to be circumcised. That wasn't the big deal. It was what the meaning was. Okay. Any other comments or thoughts about that?
Later.
Yes.
I think later on in Galatians, he refers to the process of getting circumcised just to do it, calls it a mutilation.
That's right. I think it's chapter 5.
It accomplishes nothing at all.
Yeah. Correct. Good point. Good point. Okay. I had down, we're not going to have time, and I don't even know if I want to take the time, whether it's today or next week, but, you know, this. Some had referred to this law as being everlasting, and we could get into that, and why, if the word everlasting or the thought was there, why did it go away? The other thing that I was going to look at is when tradition becomes sinful. You know, they had the tradition, and it kind of goes back to the question I asked earlier that Ben answered. You know, it wasn't really necessary, but we knew it was going to. Paul knew it was going to cause a little bit of a problem, so went on with it. But Paul didn't hesitate to use the tradition of circumcision when it was expedient. And that was a point made earlier. I think there was some expediency there in sticking with that tradition to not cause a big problem. So there were other Jewish traditions that I think we could make that same argument. In Acts chapter 18, we could read about that. And we know that that involves some animal sacrifices in Acts chapter 21. So there were times where tradition was talked about. But it for sure can become sinful. Yeah.
He doesn't use the word legalism, but I think that's what he means here. And what we see in Galatians 3:10 is that if you're going to live by trying to fulfill the law, by being circumcised to these matters, what's going to happen is you're going to be cursed.
Right.
Because you can't keep
all
of those works of the law. It's just not possible. So you will be cursed.
Yeah. Good point.
When you mentioned covenant, everlasting covenant.
Yeah.
You're talking about the covenant between Abraham and God.
Correct. Because I know some.
Between those two, that was the covenant that through you, all nations of the earth will be blessed. And that's still happening today.
Right. But some want to say, and there were some, and I think that was kind of some of the argument there, is they felt like that was a covenant that should be kept. Or not the covenant, but the actual act of circumcision, not the covenant through Abraham.
You're talking about the law
there. Right, right. Yep. Good point. All right, well, I'm going to ring the bell as they come up. Any last-second thoughts or comments? And then I know we completely kind of got derailed from Galatians, but for us to understand too, and what comes later in the book or the letter is important for us to understand. So we'll pick up in the early part of Galatians chapter 2 next week.